Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. The writer Tom Perrotta, who lives in Belmont, is a keen observer of life in our modern world, of human frailties and human contradictions. That comes through loud and clear in his latest novel, which tells the story of Eve Fletcher, a 46-year-old divorced mother living alone after her bro-y lacrosse-playing son Brendan leaves for college, mostly to party and to meet girls. Eve is concerned about her son's casual treatment of women, but as an empty nester, she develops a taste for internet porn. Tom Perrotta is perhaps best known for his novel The Leftovers, which became a hit HBO series and ended its third and final season just this past June. He's also author of Election and Little Children, which were both made into Oscar-nominated movies. His new novel, out today, is called Mrs. Fletcher, and Tom Perrotta is with us now. Welcome back to Radio Boston. It's great to have you, and it's great to be reading your book. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So I would love to just start with your sort of your description of your main protagonist, Eve Fletcher. What does she represent? Who is she?
You gave a nice setup for the book. Eve is a 46-year-old woman. The one thing she's happy about in her life is she runs a senior center. She feels fulfilled as a professional woman. She is not fulfilled in her personal life, and she is dreading the absence of her son and the kind of loneliness that she foresees when she is really in an empty nest. You know, we talk about the empty nest, but it's one thing if it's a married couple thinking about, okay, who are we when we're not parents? That's one kind of problem. But for Eve, it's like, I need something in my life. And one of the things she does is she goes back to school. So she's in college while her son is in college. She just takes one night class. But she is also actively looking to jumpstart her love life, and she gets a little more than she bargains for.
Right. And I want to talk a little bit about how she gets there. But I'd love you to do a reading from early on in the book, because it sets up a couple of themes that I want to talk to you about. So can you read this short passage? It's right on page 14, and the setup is that Eve finally delivers her son, Brendan, to his dorm room. She has high hopes about this college experience that Brendan is embarking on, including her high hopes as to who his roommate might be.
That's right. Okay, yes. So Eve has to park the car, and when she gets back to the dorm, Brendan is already there with his roommate. The new roommate seemed nice enough, but Eve had to work to conceal her disappointment. She'd hoped that Brendan would get a more exotic roommate, a black kid from inner city Boston, or a visiting student from mainland China, or maybe a gay guy with a passion for musical theater, someone who would expand her son's horizons and challenge him to move beyond his suburban comfort zone. Instead, he'd gotten paired with a young man who could have been his long-lost brother, or at least a teammate on the Haddington High lacrosse team. When she arrived, the boys were admiring their matching mini-fridges. "We could dedicate one to beer," Zach suggested. "The other one could be for non-beer stuff, lunch meat or whatever." "Totally," agreed Brendan. "Milk for cereal." "Arizona's." Zach fingered his puka shells. "Might be cool if we stacked one on top of the other. Then it would be like one medium-sized fridge with two compartments. Give us more floor space that way." "Sweet." Eve went straight to work, putting sheets and blankets on Brendan's bed and organizing his closet and dresser just the way they were at home so he wouldn't be disoriented. Neither boy paid much attention to her. They were strategizing about maybe lofting one of the beds and moving a desk underneath, freeing up enough space for a couch, which would make it easier to play video games. And she told herself that it was completely natural for a mother to be ignored in a situation like this. This was their room and their world. She was an outsider who would soon be on her way.
I love this scene in the dorm room. What's going through her mind? I mean, this is sort of painful for her, given how the sort of hopes and expectations for that day begin.
Right? Yeah, well, so, you know, Eve is very invested in making this a day to remember and a kind of a capstone to this chapter of their lives where Brendan was living at home and he's her son, and she's proud of him and has high hopes. But he doesn't follow her script, and in fact, she catches him that morning with his girlfriend. She doesn't catch them visually, but she hears through the door that they're engaged in some sexual activity, and he says some things that strike her as very crude and, you know, bordering on misogynist. And it really troubles her, and she's torn on the ride to college between being a responsible mother and talking to him about respect for women and sticking to this idea that they're going to have a great day. And like a lot of conflict-averse parents, she kind of chickens out.
Yeah.
And
he does her the favor by sort of pulling his hat down over his eyes and says, "Wake me up when we get there,
yeah,
Mom."
Yeah, he sleeps or pretends to sleep. And so when she sees that, you know, he has this roommate who is just like him, she has this sinking feeling like, oh, he's not going to have the college experience that I hope for him, which is that he'll be changed and challenged and will grow up.
Now, early in the book, Eve gets an anonymous text message. This is after she's dropped Brendan off at college. And it refers to her by a crude acronym that we won't use on the radio, but it means basically a sexually attractive older woman. And this sends her down a really interesting path, which dominates a good deal of the book. So tell us a little bit about this journey, where it takes her.
Yeah, so Eve gets this text, and she's offended, and she's worried that it may have come from one of Brendan's friends, which makes it even creepier. But she actually realizes that she doesn't exactly know what this term means, and she Googles it. And, of course, in the process of Googling it, she discovers that there is this sort of gigantic reservoir of pornography, some of which she ends up almost in spite of herself looking at it, and she finds a site that is basically ordinary women sending in their amateur videos. And in a way that surprises her, she's almost flattered. She's like, oh, maybe I am that. And that what that is you know, she's thinking, I'm lonely, I'm past my prime, my sexual life may be over. And suddenly this word, this label, comes to her, and she puts it on. She tries it on because there's nothing else to try on at this moment in her life. And what it does, oddly, is sort of eroticize her world in a strange way, because there are these porn scenarios that she becomes aware of. Suddenly she sees these scenarios offering themselves up in real life, and sometimes she simply fantasizes, and a couple of times she actually tries them out.
It's so interesting. You know, we talk about contradictions and sort of these ironic contradictions that you put together so well. So she's doing that in the evening, and by day she's taking this class at a community college about gender and sexuality taught by a transgender professor, and the whole sort of experience kind of reeks of academic political correctness. So that she's got that going on one part of her life, and then this sort of exploration of porn in the other part of her life.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that's happening is that in this book is that a middle-aged person is, in a sense, navigating the sexual territory that college kids navigate. Meaning, as you say, one of the primary things going on in college right now is that both students and professors are trying to rethink gender, talk about consent, make the world more inclusive, less misogynist, et cetera. So there's a kind of high-minded attempt to restructure the way that the culture thinks about sexuality. And then there's this underworld of porn where all the rejected ideas go and are allowed to roam free,
yeah.
You know. And so I think it's especially confusing for kids because a lot of them are exposed to the porn before they're exposed to the sort of new thinking about gender and sexuality. And so they're kind of caught between two, you know, essentially opposite visions of sexuality. Like, just for instance, you know, one of the things Eve notices in porn is that there's no such thing as sexual harassment. Every time there's a chance for an inappropriate relationship, it will happen. You know, a doctor and a patient, a teacher and a student, a babysitter and a parent. I mean, those things in porn are sexy, and the idea always is that the both parties always want it.
Yeah.
You know? And of course, in college, what they're saying is, like, consent is a very specific thing, and you need to be very aware of it. And so I think contradictory messages are everywhere in our culture right now. That's I think a trademark of American sexuality. We're Puritans and we're libertines.
It's really, really interesting, and you bring this out so well. It's so much fun to read this book. I just can't sort of stress that enough. Because it could have been dark. I mean, I think there are dark moments, but I found myself sort of smiling and laughing a lot about what these folks are dealing with and the ironies that you bring out. I wanted to ask you, too, about your view or the way it's represented in this book. The sort of technology is a kind of a character almost in your book, or at least it's a lens that sort of bends and shapes people's experiences in a big way. And I think of two examples. I mean, one is the obvious Eve sort of stumbling on these porn sites that sort of take her down a rabbit hole. But early in the book, too, she asks her son to be in touch with him and to text him every day. And he does text her. And the first thing he texts her is, "Mom, college is awesome," 3 exclamation points. And the next day it's like, "Mom, college is still awesome." And she imbues so much meaning in that. These are sort of worthless text messages that he rattles off. And yet they mean so much to her. And it just made me think, what are we making of this mode of communication?
Yeah, well, there's so many things to say there, right? Because when I went to college, I had to call long distance home. And my parents were the kind of people who thought long distance calling was something to be done only in an emergency. And so we had very strict protocols for a once a week call. So going to college, I really felt like I was, on my own.
Yeah.
And I do think it's, you know, that sort of independence is very different from what kids may have now, where they're just in constant touch with their parents. Brendan is a little bit more like people of my generation. He doesn't really want to stay in touch with his mom. But the other thing I think really is going on in the book is this sense that every generation has their own experience of sexuality. And this one, it's hugely mediated by technology.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, there's a woman who works for Eve who has a sort of Tinder habit. Brandon's girlfriend sometimes treats him to a little illicit peek, you know, while they're Skyping. There's a lot of sexy texting in the book. It feels like this is a book that could not have been written before now. And I think the question always is when we look at these kind of cultural changes, it's like, are people the same and just the technology different, or has technology changed us and made us?
It's a great question. Yeah. What do you think the answer is?
I think it's changed us.
Yeah,
I do. I think I have no idea what it would be like to have access to the entire encyclopedia of human sexuality that these porn sites are when you're so young that you don't have any experience. I mean, I think sex was this sort of mystery when I was growing up, and you had to kind of fumble your way through it. And I think now people just have a lot more virtual sexual experience before they have actual sexual experience. And I don't know what that is, but I have a feeling that something new is happening.
Well, something new is happening indeed. And Tom Parada puts it in a great perspective in his book, Mrs. Fletcher. Tom Parada, best-selling author of 9 books, including The Leftovers, Election, and Little Children. His latest is Mrs. Fletcher, which is out in bookstores today. And he'll be at the Brookline Booksmith tonight at Newtonville Books on August 11th. We have a lot more information on our website at radioboston.org. Tom Parada, thanks so much for coming in. What a pleasure to meet you and talk to you. Appreciate it.
Thanks. It's been fun.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.